This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp Online Therapy.
I'm Micheline Malouf.
And I'm Nadia Desi, licensed therapist and host of Getting Better, Stories of Mental Health. Join us for discussions with Megan Trainor, Chris Bosch, Rebel Wilson, and more.
From discussing motherhood to immigrating to general mental health, our guests are awe-inspiring. We all struggle with the same things, so let's talk about it and destigmatize them. Find our new podcast, Getting Better, Stories of Mental Health, on iHeart, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.
Hey guys, it's 6:33 on Sunday, January 9th, 2022. The news just broke that Bob Saget died. This is a really tough one to process. And here's why for me. I woke up this morning. First of all, I've been blessed to be in the presence of one of the kindest people in entertainment and for that matter, on planet Earth I've ever met. He did the podcast when Brad and I were doing it back at my old place on Laurel Avenue next to the Laugh Factory. Could not have been nicer, funnier, sweeter. And then I did a couple charity gigs with him, and Brad has as well. And I mean, as funny as he is, nice as he is, kind as he is, lovely to be around, and someone who just loved his job. And man, when people just have so much humility and appreciation for their gift and what they get to do and want to share it, and are just, kindness is so underrated. It's so fucking underrated. Like, man, treating someone with kindness goes such a long way. It just is lasting impressions and relationships that can be formed, and you take kindness with you. It's like a superpower, I truly believe. When people pass that shit on to you and it goes into your veins and your blood and you feel it, you pay it forward. You pass it on. It's like this fun game of tag amongst humans that really, I think, is transmittable. And Bob just exuded it 25-8. But this morning I woke up and immediately, like the first thing I clicked on Facebook, like a mom, immediately right to Facebook. Ooh, Pam's got some new recipes. And I saw Bob with this beautiful post about what being on tour meant to him right now, and being on stage, and how much fun he was having. Was throwing some love to my boy Mike Young, who's been on tour with him for a handful of years now. Sweet dude, hilarious. And it was the first thing that popped up, and I read it, and it started my day, and it filled me up with so much optimism for the day. And again, in this business where people are cynical and bitter and overwhelmed and excited and fucking sad, and he just, you look to root for people. And again, piggyback on their positivity, which everyone should be doing. And I started the day with a fucking bang this morning because I woke up, clicked Facebook, and this popped up, and I'm going to read it right now. From Ponte Verde Beach, Florida, where he did the Ponte Vedra Concert Hall. He said, okay, I love tonight's show at Ponte Vedra Concert Hall in Jacksonville. Really nice audience. Lots of positivity. Happened last night in Orlando last night at the Hard Rock Live. Very appreciative and fun audiences. Thanks again to Tim Wilkins for opening. I had no idea I did a two-hour set tonight. I'm back in comedy like I was when I was 26. I'm guessing I'm finding my new voice and loving every moment of it. All right, see you in 2 weeks, January 28th and 29th, Improv Comedy Club in West Palm Beach with my brother Mike Young, and check bobsaget.com for my dates in 2022. Going everywhere until I get the special shot, and then probably keep going because I refound my comedy mojo and I'm addicted to this shit. Peace out. With a really sweet picture of him in front of the theater, man. And he just looks so goddamn content and happy. And you need that. Everyone needs that, and you root for people to feel that. I felt it hit me, man. It got me to the core when I read that this morning, as it does with reading about his passing. I felt so good because he felt so good. And I guess it's also I know how nice of a guy he is and how, again, sweet and kind he is and how much joy he's brought so many people. And you root for people to do what they love and enjoy doing it and to be happy and healthy. That's it, man. That's what life is. That's it. Find something you love doing. Do it a bunch. Hopefully it's bringing joy to many. And do it as long as you can. And share it all with the people that matter to you. And Bob did that times 10. So I wanted to replay the podcast Bob did with us, which you'll hear in the intro that Brad and I do for this episode, how fired up we were. I mean, we were just so beside ourselves that he came to my shitty little apartment and recorded the podcast with us. It was just a treat beyond treats. And the episode came out March 27th, 2014. Brad and I have been doing the pod for less than a year at that point, I believe, and maybe a year and a half. But this was definitely a big get for us. We couldn't believe it. The episode's tremendous, and rest in peace, Bob. You did it right. You just did it with a lot of joy, man. And it was felt every time anyone crossed your path. Thanks for the memories. Thanks for the kindness. Thanks for the laughs. Enjoy this replay episode of the About Last Night podcast with the great Bob Saget.
Hey, it's Herbert. And you're listening to the About Last Night podcast, you slippery little son of a bitch.
Hey, everybody. Adam Ray and Brad Williams for the About Last Night podcast. Holy shit.
Yeah, right? What just happened?
I mean, Brad and I we just finished taping an amazing episode. Bob Saget, you know, we both were just like, I can't,
We're huge fans. He's part of the TGIF night, and not just that, but...
Part of your life, night.
Yeah, he's part of your life, whether it be America's Funniest Home Videos, Full House, his stand-up now, his appearances on Entourage. I mean, Bob Saget is part of American pop culture,
yeah.
And we interviewed him.
Oh, the reason, I mean, America's Funniest Home Videos is the reason, first of all, that, I mean, it probably gave the creators of YouTube a pretty good idea of, like, how to make some cash.
Yeah, it's like, hey, we could show people getting kicked in the balls.
Yeah.
We can do that.
Bob, in this episode, not only reminds you how much you love Bob Saget as a human being,
so
but, man, you just get great insight into... you know, his comedy brain and the some of the stories that he tells are we get into a lot of them. Then some of them he touches on that you know, set up why you should buy his book Dirty Daddy that's out.
I'm gonna buy it. I'm sold based on this.
It comes out April 8th.
Yeah,
yeah. And I mean, there are some stories he wouldn't even get into because he's like, you just got to get the book,
and I will just for that. Yeah, there were Full House stories. There was stand up stories. There was stories about his personal life. And yes, in case you've been listening and you know the backstory, we did talk about Stamos. So we got to the bottom of that a little bit.
Yeah.
But just a great episode. We'll just get through our plugs and then we'll get right through it. Please follow me on Twitter at FunnyBrad. You can go to my website, BradWilliamsComedy.com. This is a special date. It's coming out Wednesday. So in 2 days, March 21st to the 23rd, I will be at the Brea Improv with... feature act Adam Ray. Oh. The About Last Night show will be there. So
those are maybe the most fun shows of the year for me, because performing with you is always the best.
Yeah,
because your crowds are great and it's hometown, and that club is great. And it's like, you know, to get to people who don't know the importance of having a buddy on the road,
right?
To perform with it's like you and I both enjoy each other's comedy, so that's fun. And then B, it's like you get to hang after.
Yeah, we get to hang, and we get to do drunken videos in my condo afterward, which
they go viral.
Yeah, it sounds way more sexual than it actually is. But yeah, so come see me there. Come see me at the Comedy Club on State Street in Madison, Wisconsin, March 27th through the 29th, and then Tampa Bay, Florida. I'm coming to you April 3rd through April 6th. I'll be at the Improv in Tampa Bay.
Follow me on Twitter at Adam Ray Comedy. All my tour dates, AdamRayTV.com. March 20th, I will be at Ohio State University with Workaholics Adam Devine. March 21st at Cornell University, also with Adam. And then Saturday and Sunday, I will be at the Bray Improv with Bradley Williams.
All right.
And then next weekend, April 3rd through the 5th, I will be doing Big Sky Comedy Club in Missoula, Montana, and then more tour dates, San Diego, Irvine, and of course, Las Vegas. The Tropicana, I'm headlining the Laugh Factory in Vegas. Viva Las Vegas!
All right.
For the first time ever, Brad's headlined Vegas many times.
Yeah.
So he knows how special this is.
It's fun. It's going to be a good time. You're going to go there, and you're literally going to see your name in lights. And it's and
I can't.
It's going to be sweet.
On a Vegas marquee.
Yeah.
That's like.
It's a mind fuck the first time it happens. And it never really gets old. So congratulations,
thank
buddy.
You, buddy.
And you can go see that. And also continue to support the podcast by rating it on iTunes, telling your friends about it, tweeting us, tweeting about it. And if you want to...
Hashtag about last night.
Yes.
Please, as much as possible.
We do read them and we do retweet them very often.
We retweet the favorites. We like the posts. We rewind the retweets and the likes and the...
Yeah, we do it all.
We sweet the retweets. Tweets.
Absolutely.
Obviously, we've posted some pictures of some of the guests we have coming up, and, you know, we've got confirmations from some pretty notable people that are just continuing to make this podcast a blast. It gets excited for us to be in the presence of these people and have a conversation, but knowing that you guys get to enjoy it is awesome. And this episode with Bob Saget is the beginning of a nice run of some really incredible guests, and
you
and
will enjoy them.
He starts it off with a bang. I don't think you want to be in any situation where you're going to have to take a break from listening to this episode.
Notice these are ad-free,
yes.
So we don't make any money. So help us make money,
yeah, please,
by going to aboutlastnightpodcast.com, clicking on the Amazon banner whenever you need to shop for anything, and then shop normally, and then Amazon will pay us a little bit. It costs you nothing, but you get to support us and hopefully the guys that allow you to have some funny in your life for free. So please go do that.
And of course, on our website, aboutlastnightpodcast.com, that's where you can get all past and present episodes, stream them on your phone right off the website.
Darn right.
It's the best.
If you missed them, we got episodes like Chris D'Elia, Paul Feig, Lisa Kudrow, Dane Cook, Whitney Cummings.
Oh, man.
They're all
there.
The
whole Workaholics cast.
The whole Workaholics cast. They're all there. Check them out.
Coming up, Adam Carolla, Craig Ferguson.
Yeah. We got and Russell Peters.
Russell Peters. Melissa McCarthy in July. I can't believe that's happening.
My mind's still blown.
Those are going to be amazing, but for now.
But for now, please sit back and enjoy this episode of the About Last Night podcast with the legendary Bob Saget.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Got a midget and a Jew, so why don't you sit down and no podcast during lunch, dinner, or breakfast. Brad Williams and Adam Ray are here for you any time of the day. So come on and treat yourself right. It's about last night.
Who pays for this? How did this start?
We pay for this. At first, John Lovitz was paying for this a year and a half ago. Yeah. And then he said that he didn't want podcasts at his club anymore, and we said, all right, we're going to take our ball and go somewhere else. And now, obviously you can tell by this apartment where Adam is very successful.
Sure.
It's really nice.
Sure, one movie, that's all it takes.
just to go to one movie.
That's it. If you go to the ArcLight now, they just give you free bandwidth.
Podcast.
Well, you don't have cup holders here. They do.
Yeah, we've got the toasters that look like.
Look, the place smells nice.
Thank
it's
you.
Not bad.
Thank you, Bob.
I mean, it's your place. I don't have to run like a red light over the whole place. I don't think.
Well, no, not this particular table.
We've got a separate table. We come on.
This is the only thing in the house that has not been violated. Yeah. That's what you're telling me.
Yeah. Well, pretty much because it has our podcast stuff on it, and we actually respect our podcast equipment.
Right. Well, it's nice equipment. Looks new too. You like steal it from the Laugh Factory? Walk down the street and took Jamie's old soundboard.
We don't like to discuss that. Jamie's very possessive about his podcast stuff.
Right.
I mean,
well, that's made in Israel. That board. Unlike Jamie. Well, we can't talk about it.
Right. I've actually been referencing you a lot in my act recently.
And it's okay. It's nice, right?
Yeah. Well,
nothing bad.
Well, no, it's not bad. It's the story of us at the Kevin and Bean April Foolishness.
Right.
And when you
came
out.
A couple years
ago. Yeah. And when you came out to me and said, Brad, you have to come meet John Stamos.
Yes.
He's afraid of little people.
It's true. He
How many times have you opened with that statement to anybody?
I've said it a couple times because I have some little people friends.
Yeah.
And not many. But actually, three of them equal one normal friend.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, because we could all do that Muppets thing where we just like stack on top of each other. Just wear like the giant trench coat and we're good.
It's hard when the guy in the middle has to take a shit. That's really, really difficult. Because you got to take the guy off the top, and then the bottom guy, if you don't get him off in time, he's just screwed.
It's terrible. It's like a human centipede.
There's got to be a name for that, too, if the guy does end up shitting on the shoulders.
I think just called shitting on the
just
shoulders.
Shoulders, yeah.
Yeah, it's an old old blues tune from the 1890s.
Shit shoulders.
Yeah, shit shoulders.
Small hot mess.
There you go.
And you want to be facing the same direction. That's
sure. Well, that's key. Yeah, that's assumed though.
So now, yeah, he was scared of. I think he kind of made it up.
Scared is too big of a word.
He was uncomfortable. Now I.
Well, now you've seen him since, and he liked, and he's a fan of yours. He watches your stand up, and
yeah, it's kind of interesting to where because we all took a picture together,
right?
And you could see in the picture that he's kind of craning his neck, and he's visibly uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And but now I think we're good. He insulted my breath on Twitter, so that's nice.
Jesus, what's going on with your breath?
Why? When did he do that?
Oh, because I got all the fans of this podcast to say to tweet him and say why are you afraid of little people?
Oh.
And we have power in this business, Bob. Sure. We might even be able to get you a gig. Are you? You know,
I play small houses. I hate jokes like that too. I hate them, but you do them just like I do my self-loathing stuff. That's not self-loathing, but I'm going. Hi, I'm a Jewish tall guy. Hi,
right? Tell
me I look like you know yada yada.
Yeah,
Bill Nye the Science Guy.
Do you still use the Gumby Mr. Potato Head?
No, that's I buried that 30 years ago.
That was in the Rodney
on
special?
The Rodney special. Yeah.
It might have been. Yeah.
Yeah. How was that, by the way? That was like. How new into stand-up were you when...
I've been doing stand-up a while. I think I was like 24 or 5 or... I don't know when I did that. So I've been doing stand-up for about 8 years already.
Yeah.
And doing that same joke. It wasn't even a joke. It was just esoteric riffing.
A fact, yeah.
Yeah. What is it about... Yeah, nothing. It was nothing. It was my mother's Gumby, my father's Pokey, and I'm Mr. Potato.
It crushed, though.
It was nothing.
Murdered.
But basically, they realized that these were my self-deprecating issues.
Right.
So
right.
Yours mm-hmm. would be whatever you... Are you a stand-up as well?
Yeah. Yeah.
Forgive
me
for not knowing that.
That's fine, yeah. No, this is our first... you know, I was actually telling Brett earlier, our first interaction... And, you know, you meet so many people. And obviously, I mean, we've been around at the Comedy Store and stuff like that. But I hosted a Comedy Jew show once. It was the first time I met you. And I was bringing up you and Jeff Ross, I think, together. I was going to bring you up. And then you were going to bring
piano for him.
Yeah. And then you were going to bring Jeff up. And I said, hey, Bob, I'm Adam. Adam Ray. And you go, Adam Ray. And you go, rhymes with gay. You go, you gay? And I go, no, man, I'm straight. You go, you ever sucked a dick? And I go, no, man.
I said this to you.
Dude, it was. I mean, drinks were being had. I think it was a very jovial evening, and
I don't think I was. Well, I could have been. I don't know. It's hard to say. But I came in with Jeff, which means we probably were at dinner, which means I probably had eight drinks.
Yeah, yeah. But you guys were hysterical. I mean, you went up there together and you played piano.
What was the answer? You said you did not ever.
I said I did not. Yeah, and yeah, I was very firm on that stance. And then and then I said, "What's going to happen?" I go, "When?" You said, "You go, I'm going to come up," and you went into a aristocrat style explanation of what was going to happen before I was going to bring you up, and then you went into there's going to be you know how you do in the film like you were like I'm going to shit, then Jeff's going to come up, then he's going to
no,
do.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah,
really.
It was hilarious.
Wow. You
does gave, that not seem like
you gave Adam a moment?
This is why I don't even go to the market anymore. People come up to me and go, you know, you were at the register, and this is what you said to me. People come up and say, do you know what you said to me?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I'm like, no.
Now, do you feel the pressure?
Oh no, it was a great moment.
Do you feel the pressure because you're a huge star? And when
it's all relevant. I mean,
and when people meet you, though, they want to have their Bob Saget moment.
True.
And so, like, do you feel a need to say that you should come on their face or shit in their mouth?
I don't usually talk like that. I actually do not.
You say that for the stage.
No, I also don't do that.
Yeah.
My jokes are dirty, but they're much bluer as perceived by everybody.
Of course.
Response.
Yep.
Which is really weird. But then I'll do a set, and then I'll go, God, I was really dirty that show, which is, lives up to what you're saying completely. Right. But I don't say.
Yeah, you're not filthy for the sake of being filthy. Yeah.
I'd rather say poop in your mouth.
There you go. That's what.
And I don't even talk like that. I mean, off stage, if I just met you, I'll probably say something like "eat your poop like a candy bar" or something like that. But if I've never met you, right? I mean, no, we're comics backstage about to go on. It'll just be like, "Hey, let's just break all walls and just talk."
Of course,
but then I wouldn't do that on stage because that's disgusting. People don't laugh at it. I know it for a fact.
Yeah,
women do not laugh at it. You can't eat. You don't. And no one wants to hear about it.
Yeah,
especially if they've got some crappy club food sitting in front of them and they're picturing eating a candy bar.
Yeah, that's not good when they got the spinach and artichoke dip and then you start talking about bodily fluids.
Well, if there's a spinach and artichoke dip in your bodily fluid, your bodily fluid is now. This is what I'm talking about. Your bodily fluid is very thick and it's green and it's. And it's not just, I mean, it means it's got something, you've got an infection. Because if it's got a creaminess to it, then you really could, you got to see a doctor. You could be, odds are if spinach and a creamy dip are coming out in your urine, you're going to die. You're going to die soon.
Yeah, if so you're peeing creamy dip, something's not going right.
I think that we can tell people that it's a public service. Yeah. Most of what I do now is just public service.
Yeah.
And you offer that to many people through health advice, humor, various forms.
I go to clinics. I do a lot I go where people need bed rest. I've been actually in a lot of hospitals lately, it's not something I'm proud of. I just go to do it because I had to. I've had some sick people I had to deal with. And I also want to get teed up in a hospital when I get sick in about 40, 50 years.
You want to get that ready.
I want to find out who the hot nurses are.
Sure. There you go.
See who's giving you the hookup for Jell-O?
Yeah.
Past Jell-O time?
I don't even want to eat it. I just want to just rub it on me. I just want to have a...
You have the hot nurses rub the Jell-O on you, and I'm pretty sure that's a fetish tape for somebody out there.
Well, you know why? Because there's always room for it. Now, that's the kind of joke that would get no response.
Well done.
But that's not even a response.
Might as well just have a podcast.
No, you guys gave a big response.
Yes.
But, I mean, that required no response. I'm sorry. I'm off. I wasn't really listening. I didn't hear your applause. I didn't know I was getting a positive reaction.
Was there a time when your material did, though, shift to... Because I remember the first time I saw you do stand-up at the Laugh Factory, and I hadn't seen any clip or anything yet, so I didn't know what to expect. And then,
well, this is a long time ago, probably.
Yeah, maybe 5-6 years ago.
Oh, I've been doing it.
Yeah,
for a while.
Yeah.
Oh, but you just had.
But I, you know,
you're so young.
Because I started doing stand-up 7 years ago.
How old are you?
31.
Oh my God! If I was 31 right now,
what'd you be doing?
Banging your girlfriend.
She would be.
Well, I don't know if you have one.
He might look like I have one. He might still be banging her. I wouldn't put it past Bob Saget.
No, I don't know.
No, I would never. I never would. I'm a monogamous guy. I would never cheat on anybody's person. I've made mistakes in my life, but not anymore.
Yeah.
It looks to me like your mom still lives here. That's what it looks like. I've seen.
She has helped decorate some of the
Maybe he's banging your mom. Who knows about that, Edinburgh? Yeah.
I live single. I live near here in Hollywood once.
Yeah.
If you got a tufted chair and you're single. You can't do anything in that chair. That's not your special whack chair. That's like
how do you know?
That's like you're near the dining room table.
That's my grandpa's chair, and I didn't know what to do with it. My mom was like, "Do you want to take it?
Are you Jewish?
Yeah.
So you've had deli on this table, right?
Sure.
That's where the oldest person sits with a plastic plate of deli, and they just
that's a requirement.
There.
They just sit there.
That's a chair that nothing sexual will ever happen in it.
I hope that
chair is a cock blocker for me. That chair keeps any sexuality from entering my brain. I feel like I'm at a shiva in here.
Well, you know, I mean, we wanted you to be able to concentrate and not just have a raging boner looking at two good-looking guys. So
that's true. And I've actually never – the only time I'm – it's not a raging boner, but I would say, you know, when you look at a certain guy in a movie, and I'm not going to say just anybody, you know. I'm talking like Walter Matthau used to do it for me, you know, and
pre or post Dennis the Menace?
Abe Vigoda. Always.
Abe Vigoda. Well, that's a classic.
Well, he was fish. I don't know. Fish turns me on. If you say it, if I smell it.
That damn Snickers commercial where he's playing football. That's just like a porn to you then.
With Abe Vigoda?
Yeah.
I don't even know this.
Oh, he's in a Snickers commercial where he's playing football and he gets leveled. Like he gets tackled hard.
Oh, now I'm remembering.
Yeah, and then he eats a Snickers and then he's 25 or something.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
He's a sweet guy. I worked with him once. He was so nice. And he doesn't move when you're near him. You think he's dead, but he's not.
Oh, okay. Well,
he's like a wax figure, huh?
It's hilarious. It was a roast of Matt Lauer in New York, and I flew there to do it and roasted Matt Lauer, and it's in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. And I kept saying, cut to Abe Vigoda, and he didn't move, and they showed him, and I said, that is just a still. It is
wow.
a still picture, and he died like years ago. He's just sitting there. Literally, his mouth was open. Birds could have flown.
Oh, God.
What were you going to say, Brad? I cut you off. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it's fine. You went off on a hilarious tangent that
no,
was...
No, don't you dare compliment me.
Does Matt Lauer have a good sense of humor about himself?
He's great.
Yeah.
I think he's great. I checked his prostate, because we were going through a midlife crisis thing, and... Yeah, he's a really good guy.
Yeah,
very gentle.
Who was that? Who was that roast for? Was it
that was
for Howard?
For Matt Lauer. It was at the Hilton in New York Hilton.
Okay, so is it just like a Friars Club thing? Like
it was not televised. It was like the one that they did for Jack Black that I hosted.
Okay,
that I was the roast master or whatever you call it.
I'm always curious when people that like aren't in like I mean Matt Lauer's a TV personality and like known for having a sense of humor more or less, but not specifically in comedy. So I'm always curious those people if they are able to not take themselves so like Barbara Walters. I'm curious if she could handle
a
roast.
She can definitely take a punch, and I know that because I was on The View, and I punched her.
She asked for it. I'm guessing.
Well, she's in show business, so yeah. You know, it's very hard to be a woman in this business. So
she recently revealed on air that she still uses a vibrator.
Holy shit!
That's amazing for cooking.
Yes, as a whisk.
She didn't say specifically.
Right,
she makes pancakes.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
to stir the batter.
All you gotta do is beat it. You know, those are the kind of jokes that is the reason why no one wants to host that video show anymore. Everybody's quitting. They're running away.
You must have felt, I mean, having the quick jokes like that, because that was what your act consisted of, yeah?
It's puns. Yeah, it's a lot of double entendre and pun. It's really just kind of Groucho was the influence. And it was just then it was my own acerbic stupidity. And everything has a root from something else, as you know. I mean,
yeah.
Something's rooted in someone else's comedy, and you don't mean to do it sometimes.
Right.
Not just the joke, but the style. So
did you have a hand in writing the America's Funniest Home Videos jokes?
I did. I wrote it with two Canadian guys, Todd Thick's brother Alan Thick, who still produces and writes it today, and Robert Arnott, who used to write the Smothers Brothers Show and a lot of variety television. And I was smart enough to know that I was on at 7 o'clock at night on a Sunday night. So there ain't too many.
Understanding your time slot's key.
Jokes.
Yeah, you can't really
do
that too much.
Groaners. There's a lot of groaner type jokes. But that's what a clip show is. I was hosting a blooper show.
How far could you push the envelope with something that was...
We did, actually, but nobody cares. But now if they watch them, like I'll look at Twitter now and someone will go, I can't believe Bob Saget did this. And it'll be... I had a boy. I said, I want a kid to be dressed as a centaur. And I want him to be 14 and I want him to be shirtless. And I want half his body to be a horse. And I want to... The reason we're going to do this whole thing is so that we can finally get to the point of, okay, well... When we come back, first I'm gonna ride the centaur boy over to the other side of the stage. And he says, okay, Bob, ride me over, Bob. And so we did all of it. We did like 3 minutes. And it was an hour devoted to animals and how funny they were. So I wanted a centaur boy, a shirtless young boy.
As you do.
As I have.
Sure. That's every Hanukkah wish list.
Yeah. It was kind of like a Spartacus blooper reel. And people just recently just sent me that and go, I can't believe you did this. This is a why? And that was why. And I would say things like, you know, and Tosh is like pretty much the best at it, I guess.
Yeah.
But I did stuff like that, but nobody heard it. I would say these clips are going to spew into your face faster than you can get an oven mitt to wipe them off. You know, just like, but that was the roasting. But I had that, you know, if the sound was off, I looked like I was your dentist. So
right.
Just some nice young
that,
man.
And you had that delivery of everyone's dad. And like,
and I was only 30 when I got the gig. So
oh,
I was
kidding.
Everybody's
now,
young, weird, creepy dad.
That's so funny because the look really did. I mean, the fact that you said spewing in, like, just the way
right
your
there.
Demeanor
it was on
is
paper.
Right there.
Mm-hmm. Right, but they're mostly groaners and a lot of stupid jokes, and I own them. I mean, I the two guys wrote the show. I wrote the show. We wrote about 55 pages a week.
Holy shit.
And we had to write. I also did all the voices. So
yeah.
I would, look out, you know, like
right.
Mel Blanc. Oh, no. Yeah,
that had to be pretty fun, though. Yeah, I mean,
it was fun to do it. And at that time, we had a VHS, and I would hook it into my computer, and it was a program that allowed you to run your VHS in one square on your screen, and then have Microsoft Word underneath it. So we didn't even have like Final Cut or anything. Program, and we would be watching horses, you know, getting. Horses getting kicked in the nuts, and I'd be, oh no, and I'm writing, no, it needs three more H's, and I'd be all proprietary about the keyboard. It was all
no kidding. I mean,
so much more work.
And this is like, and this is not on some cable access. This is ABC, right?
It was like, yeah, and it was
the prime time.
It was beginning of YouTube. I mean, it was, yeah, kinda, it was before that. It was really cool, but then. I'm aware how the jokes were quite painful for a lot of people. And I used to apologize for it. Now I just, you know, Tom Bergeron had the greatest line. He calls the show the annuity. That's what he calls it. You know, oh, how do you, those jokes. And it's like, yeah, but he didn't try to be a comedian on there. He tried to be
a
traffic cop.
Yeah.
And he's a very, very good guy.
But you know what, though? You own those jokes so much, and you had that look on your face of, I know.
Yeah, like, that was always it. And it was helped me, too. It was a lot of that. I'm friends with Craig Ferguson. I love Craig.
I just did a show Thursday, stand-up.
I want to see that.
Yeah.
Can you run it? Have it right now?
they pushed me to next week because Kristen Bell's interview went long.
Is that true?
Yeah.
So you just did his show, but
I just
you
did
got
stand-up.
Bumped.
Yeah, yeah.
In a book I wrote about how I got bumped from The Tonight Show with Carson by Jimmy Stewart bringing an extra guest on the show.
Is that in Dirty Daddy?
We should promote me at some point.
Yeah, let's do it.
I want to know when you're on Craig Ferguson. What's the new date?
I haven't gotten it yet. They said sometime this week, so hopefully I'll find out tomorrow.
Now, well, how's it listed?
Well, it was listed on the TV as, you know, Kristen Bell, this guy Michael McMillan or something, and then comedian Adam Ray. And
okay.
Then, I did The Couch when the heat came out, but this is the first time doing stand-up. And so it listed me comedy by Adam Ray, and then but then it didn't
happens to everybody.
Yeah, right.
It has to happen.
Yeah. Also, yeah. Kristen Bell was promoting. She's a quite a bit bigger of a draw, and the Veronica Mars thing. So I understood that. Obviously, you get a couple more minutes with her. That's could be a ratings change,
just,
right?
I don't think that's even the thought. I think it's going well, and they just keep it going.
Yeah.
So, and comics are at the low of the food chain,
of course,
right?
But mimes, at least there's no mimes on there.
Yeah, thank God. Not anymore.
I guess they just figure, well, the comic we can throw in at any time. There's for people that don't do stand up, they just think that, well, just throw the comic into whatever situation, they'll be funny. And they don't necessarily realize.
Or they also get scared. They might that the show itself is concerned. Well, where is he or she at their? And it's mostly new guy comics that you see. You don't see a lot of new girl comics on these shows when they give someone a spot.
Right.
And I get excited though when I see a comedian on. And I did like 13 Merv Griffin shows and 13 Tonight shows. But I never did stand up on the Tonight Show. I only did panel. So
okay,
it was
so when you were going to do it with Carson, you weren't doing stand up.
I never did stand up on there. I just sat.
Okay, so you were coming
to
on
my
to
advantage. Yeah, no, not really. I was come on to be at that time. They would have you on if you were a funny person, like a funny young guy. Like the older version of me was Charles Grodin would just go on there. He would be in a movie or not. You know, before his movie career actually took off, he was just on The Tonight Show as this really funny guy, a guy that was just smart. And then he was in some movies. He had, he had a big film career for a while, too.
And then you did stand-up.
Very funny.
You did stand-up on the Merv Griffin Show?
I did. I did 13 appearances. Two of them were on top of Merv.
All right.
He was actually really incredibly good to comics, like really, really good at comics.
Yeah, I think like everyone obviously talks about the Tonight Show with Carson, as they should, but
yeah.
I think the Merv Griffin Show gets overlooked a lot in terms of how many comics that it put on. And
huge amount of comics. I got to try stuff out, and he was always trying to build people up, and he was just really nice, and he gave them all panel. Everybody was most of the time. I think I'm not sure that's a blanket statement, but I would be able to come over to the couch afterward and talk to him for a little bit. And
did you was the Merv Griffin? Did that sort of lead into America's Funniest Home Videos, or were you? Did you have that gig before?
How do you audition for that?
Can't you just read the book?
Called Dirty Daddy.
Oh, Brad, I didn't mean to do that to you. I put the fear of God in you.
No, it's fine.
No, you went into promo hell. I hate that.
No,
I'll answer the question first.
Okay,
and then I'll make you do the book. We're gonna sit in that
because I will read the book.
Taupe leather chair. Never been had anything but roast beef and kasha varnicas on it.
It's okay. I will sit on your lap and we'll make it fun.
There's been a lot of old Jewish sweat on that chair,
ugh.
But not the good sweat.
this the bad old bad ball. Yeah. The bad rubber, super bad
it's
ball.
It's definitely rubber, yeah.
Yeah. The answer to your question is I can't remember.
Auditioning for America's Funniest Home Video.
Well, I didn't audition. I was on Full House. Mm-hmm. The show had and I didn't audition. I did do a screen test for Full House, but I was on a show on CBS called The Morning Program.
Yeah.
And I auditioned for that. I was on a tape that William Morris had sent out, and they picked me to be the third co-host, like a sidekick of morning TV.
Okay.
And it was basically CBS Morning News, and they changed it for a little bit.
So it wasn't like Wake Up San Francisco in Full House. It was like, no, it was like an actual news show.
It was like right. You being on a show right now,
right.
And you would be like on Good Morning America every day with comedy segments.
Gotcha.
So that's what
okay.
I did.
Okay.
I was 29 years old.
It seems like a fun gig.
It was a great gig till they fired me and had me saying it's 15 minutes after the hour off camera on the steps.
Oh God.
Oh, everybody. It happens
and,
to everybody.
And yeah. You're fired and you still say that stuff?
They knew I had to leave, but they were being nice enough to keep me somewhat there.
Okay.
And then I would introduce a comedy segment, so I would discover comedians as the guy who was undiscovered yet himself.
So were you like Rod Roddy for The Price is Right? They'd hear your voice and cut to you like twice every commercial break?
Well, that didn't last more than a couple weeks because I went in to quit at the same time that they were going to fire me, and I was with my manager who flew in, and I had already had Full House teed up as to be my manager made it work, and Jeff Franklin was the producer anyway, so I did a screen test for Full House. Got that job, and then the video show was just an offer. Mm-hmm. It was just an offer to host a pilot because Full House was on TV already.
Yeah.
So they just said, he's an amicable guy that can never say anything wrong.
He's friendly. He's a dad.
We know he's dirty, but he never has been on Full House. So and he's accessible. He looks like a nice young man.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you any idea as you're doing Full House from a couple episodes in? Obviously, you can probably tell the chemistry that you all have at that point, but there's any indication of like, oh, this is could be of like the next like family show that people.
No, and in fact, it did really poorly for the first four years. Now, in today's ratings, 25 share is like everybody's watching it,
right? Because that's still before 395 channels,
right,
so
right. Yeah. So it was. It took about 4 years till people liked it, and it was on against Seinfeld, and it was crushing Seinfeld. Nobody knew what Seinfeld was the first couple years. And then that found itself, and then they moved us to Fridays, and then we found ourselves on Friday nights in this TGIF crazy thing. And then the video show was supposed to be a pilot, and then it turned into a...
Do you think the success of Full House kind of gave America's from some videos a little bit of a boost?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure... Well, no, the video show beat 60 Minutes, so that thing, whoever would have hosted that show... That thing would have been a juggernaut.
That's just the power of people getting hit in the groin.
It was, and no one had ever seen it before. There was candid camera, but nobody had ever seen tapes that were sent in mainly by the public. There was an ad in People magazine: "Send us your tapes. People get hit in the groin."
Is there any great like host stories? Like you hear like Harrison Ford, just beat out this guy for Indiana Jones. Did you just beat out Tony Danza or something like that? Was he like?
No, there was
another shot of a guy.
They just offered me the show.
Oh, wow.
The reason I got the show was I had gone on the Tonight Show and narrated my wedding video and showed my wedding video to Johnny and narrated it.
Yeah.
And my nephew was like 7 in the wedding and they show him and I said, this is more part of the narration. I said, we didn't see him the rest of the wedding. He was in the bathroom the whole time with the drummer. So I was still doing pedophilic stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, that's
a joke.
That's all the past. Let's not talk about it anymore. It gives me the heebie-jeebies and I had to write a damn book about it. It took me a year and a half to go through my entire... then I said, I don't want it to be memoirs. I just want to write a book. And they went, well, what's it going to be about then? I went, I don't know. It's not a novel. Maybe my observations. So it's a lot about my testicles. And it's
if you've ever wanted to know about Bob Saget's testicles, you could pick up the book Dirty Daddy.
The Chronicles of a Family Man Turned Filthy Comedian. You can get BobSaget.com, Amazon, right? All that.
It goes out to, it's going to be on, you can buy it in every bookstore. I'm doing like...
You can do a book tour.
I'm doing a book tour.
That's awesome.
New York, Washington, Chicago, L.A., and I'm doing a bunch of talk shows and all that stuff you do. Like,
that's awesome.
Like a hoe. But I'm proud of it.
Those book tour things, though, are, I feel like, kind of essential when you're and can be really profitable as far as the success and exposure of the book.
That's what I wanted to do well. I spent a year and a half on it. It was really hard to write it, and it has a lot of death in it. The book is really about death in comedy because I lost two sisters and four uncles and a lot of people in my life just died. And so a lot of the comedians that you know and you know died are mm-hmm. written up in it. And cause,
sure.
So it's kind of sad, but gallows humor is throughout the whole book. So
yeah, and it kind of forced you to do that. I mean, it's kind of one of the reasons why we all do comedy is a lot of times it's to deal with stuff. And so did you feel that writing this book and putting your humorous observations in with these tragic stories, did that help with the grieving process at all?
It did, and it. And it also brought it back a lot. So everybody that's written a book told me, and this is the only one I've ever written, they said, you know, it's going to, like therapy, it's going to take you right through the dugout.
Sure.
Or the trenches, not the dugout. The dugout would be fine. I
mean, some seeds there, some tobacco. You could scratch your balls. Why not?
Nobody cares. Getting a hot dog. Can laugh at the guy who just struck out.
Mm-hmm.
But this is, you know, this is different. This is like, you know, you got a call every year that somebody died. So we're eating a lot of funerals, looking at chairs like that one in your house. That weird old Uncle Nate sat in that chair.
The more you give attention to it, I feel like it's going to have to be your parting gift when you leave this podcast.
Have you had a Shiva in this apartment before?
Possibly. That's a personal question, Bob.
Yeah. One bris. Just one bris.
That's six circumcisions. The stats on this apartment are incredible.
It is amazing. I actually talked about this in the book. Two Shabbats? It would have not been enough for us. You don't get any Jews listening to this podcast.
Maybe six. My rabbi and his ex-wife.
Oh, my God.
We go on the iTunes. It's a podcast about last night. These guys are talking.
So racist.
You can't play this thing on Friday nights.
You grew up in a very Jewish family, right, in Philly?
No.
No.
No. My parents were Jewish, right. But and I was bar mitzvah and stuff, but they might have looked like people you would, shovel away. You know, get rid of them, but they weren't
look like people you would shovel away.
Have you been to any big? I've been to a handful of like bar mitzvahs of friends of rich Hollywood kids out here, and they're some of the craziest parties I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah, that's like that's like the Sex and the City bar mitzvah.
Right,
like the best blowjob is at the bar mitzvah.
Right,
but that's I stopped doing that. That was my move. But the thing that I'm proud of is that I'm aware of all the stuff that all of us go through in doing comedy. I swear if there hadn't have been all this fucked up stuff that happened to me, if my mom and dad had been like normal people, if my mom hadn't said don't say that, don't talk like that,
and
if my dad hadn't just done a bunch of dick jokes all the time, and then my mom would go stop doing that.
Was he the funny guy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
really, really, really funny. So the two of them just created a bipolar person in me anyway, and then I took my balls and ran with them.
Literally.
Right?
And did your dad...
He never touched me.
And okay, the next question.
I paid him, and he wouldn't. I'd give him $200 a week and said, please touch me. And then I would give him... I give him a grand and ask him to put two fingers in my butt. And now, see, that's the kind of stuff. You're right.
A lot of money.
That's dirty.
Yeah,
but it's not.
But it's also factual.
But it's not in your ass, and it's not true. It didn't happen.
That's right.
Why it's funny. It's funny because it didn't happen.
Yep. It's fantastical.
But it's not. It's not gynecological. There's people that talk about the inside of the uterus. That's where it's not.
Sure.
It's not funny.
No, it's more. Yeah, it's more like it's more
clinical.
Yeah.
And it grosses me out. And I've made that mistake of doing it.
I mean, because and you see that a lot with comics, like right when they start, because whoever if their hero comics are dirty, they think they can just go on stage, say shit, fuck, cunt, whatever the hell, and then it's just automatically going to get a laugh.
Right.
Like, I think to be a smart, dirty comic is extremely difficult, and there are those fine lines that you have to walk to make sure that it's still funny and not just I'm saying shit, so it's a shock factor.
In a less blatant way, it's the same as somebody that goes, I'm not going to talk dirty. And then you watch, and there are brilliant people that do it.
Like Regan, Gaffigan, Seinfeld, those guys.
So, like most great comedians.
Yeah.
And then there's a lot of people that aren't funny. So you don't need the cursing, and you don't need the cleanliness. It'd be funny, I guess, to see somebody who's not funny at all and tries to be clean and then arbitrarily try to be dirty.
They switch up the act like, all right, the clean stuff's not working.
Right. It's just like just some bad cracker going, I fucked her up good. You know, it's like, wow, this is a great tour you're on. Nine people on a tank top.
Do you have a different approach? Like, you're doing the Nokia on Friday. which is fucking incredible.
Club Nokia.
Club Nokia.
Cool place.
Downtown, 9 o'clock.
That's this Friday, so this is on.
This is going to be on Wednesday, So, yeah, you're going to have, this is going to be two hard days.
Great. Of,
So, Friday, March 21st, you're at Club Nokia.
And Mike Young, who's my buddy.
Who is, just was here 2 weeks ago. It was incredible.
He's a great guy.
He's the best.
He's a great, great guy, and he you know, he directed this movie, My Man is a Loser. And
which I can only imagine is going to be, I mean, he's got three of my favorite people who I think together, I can only, you've seen it, yeah?
No, I have not. I've seen the trailer for it, and I've seen other pieces of it, but it's Michael Rapaport, Brian Callen, and John Stamos. So if they're your three favorite people, that explains that jack-off chair. That explains Wait a second. It's tufted like something that would be in Tower of Terror in the lobby that doesn't move, that's bolted to the floor, and yet it's cream-colored like a mustard that didn't, like a mustard that went bad. It's not like Poupon mustard. It's like that French mustard that nobody ever eats. It never has an expiration date. It just looks like no one will buy it. If you had a, if you put that out on the lawn,
nobody would take it.
Nobody would. Somebody would cut it. They would just like, they'd shred it to see.
Carve their initials into it and something. Sure.
Might be a good place to store meth and stuff. Think of it as a drug chair. Oh, that's what this is.
Yeah.
You got all these gay candles going on, a trophy and some bottles of wine.
Don't worry. Aww. You're going to leave with a hell of a parting gift.
Oh, man. I don't want that trophy. What's that for?
That's from our comedian basketball league.
Oh, so you won it for being a good basketball player?
Sure, yeah. A bunch of comics. We had these weekend games going, and then finally we were like, we should start a league and take this seriously so we could act like we have something other than comedy.
Oh, so this is, that's nice. Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, I mean, tons of Jews have basketball trophies, right?
There are some. Jews love basketball. They really do.
Yeah.
But that's a nice thing to say. Such a nice thing to say. But they do. They wish they could, all frustrated basketball players.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Like, you have, I mean, Adam is a huge fan. Woody Allen sits in the front row of the Knicks games. I mean, you wouldn't. Yeah, all the time. And you think, like, Woody Allen, you wouldn't necessarily think huge sports fan, but he is.
It's well, great. The other thing about basketball, like, it's one of, and I'm not very sports related. Like, it was very hard just getting across the street. Putting the parking permit on my car.
Yeah, you seemed like that was a bit of a struggle.
It was exhausting. And there's a hooker in front of me. You saw her.
Well, right.
Certifiable. Yeah, yeah.
She's absolutely. Out there for a couple
and
weeks.
And the whole car smelled like Febreze.
There's a reason for that.
Yeah, because you got to get down that other smell. That doesn't smell good.
Dwarf cum.
Oh,
Jesus. Which smells like?
Febreze, ironically.
Does it really?
Yeah.
Well, no.
I told Brad he needs to write a coffee table book
about the
these types of like fictional stereotypes.
But then people are saying you're a certain kind of person, but not every kind of person smells the same if they're part of a certain genetic group, do they?
God, I hope not.
I mean, people always say about certain types of people, oh, that girl's tangy. There's a tanginess to that girl.
And I go, I have never heard that girl's tangy, but now I'm going to use that all the time.
It's usually in old age.
How was she? Tangy.
It's usually after bingo.
Yeah.
Before they put Ruth to
bed. Assisted living.
You were just kicking it with Mike on the Entourage set. It was when I was
we went and visited that thing. Those are all friends. I've done that show a bunch.
Yeah, that's
happy they're making the movie. It's nice.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, it's going to be that. I think people, what do you think it is about that show that people outside of Hollywood love so much?
It's really, you know, it's funny because the show's about guys that are chasing the dream, and the dream is really meaningless. You know, it's shallow, it's nothing. But that's not what happened. It became an idolization of it. You know, it became something that the guys in Jersey, they go, "Yo, man, you're doing it." You know, and they really, and that's kind of the show's characters. They're so likable, all the guys. If you like the show, I do. I'm kind of a bitch for it.
Yep.
That you want them to be living the dream. And Vincent Chase is just walking around. Adrian doesn't know what the hell's going on.
Yeah.
And he just walks into everything and falls into everything and believes he's going to be the biggest star of all time.
Yeah.
And that's the craziness, that there are people like that here. And there's a lot of people in show business that are like that. And it works for them. It you know, they
to have that kind of naive confidence.
They know they're stepping into it. They know it, and it's not even, and their ego and their it are gigantic. And if they got the looks and they don't have that chair.
It'll be great. Now, when you get that call to be on Entourage and you're playing yourself, but I mean, it's like a hyped up version of yourself,
right? It's a little disturbing just because you have family members.
Sure.
Is there even a moment where you hesitate to go, "Oh, that's gonna paint me in this light," or do you just trust it? Oh,
I actually made it more in the book. Dirty Daddy.
Yeah,
I talk about it. I talk about how Doug Ellen, who wanted me to be in the thing and be myself, because he knew me as a stand-up, because he started out as a writer and a stand-up. So he had first said, the first cameo he asked me to do on it, he just said, I want you to just come on and, you know, just be real aggressive with girls and talk, you know, really chauvinistically, and don't worry about it. Just do that badass side of yourself that's not real, but you kind of put it on and make a joke out
right.
of it. You know, it's like the, you being a nice, likable guy and then acting like a dice.
Right,
you know,
right.
And I'm sure, I know Dice is very gentle with women, by the way. I know that because I've helped a few of them out of the hospital. But that's not true. Good disclaimer.
The disclaimer always helps. Exactly.
I've known him since I started. Man.
No kidding.
I can't believe it.
Well, was he on your Young Comedian special? Or because
no,
I know
no,
he was on that.
He was. Mine was the first one Rodney ever did. So mine was Kennison and Rita Rudner and Louis Anderson and Yakov Smirnov and Bob Nelson.
Wow.
And
why am I so thrilled about hearing Yakov Smirnov's name? I'm just like, that's so great that he was on your Young Comedian special.
He was mentioned the other night on Bill Maher in a joke that Bill did. And it was really quite charming. I'm trying to remember the context of it.
But it's strange how he's a person, yet his persona has become a caricature.
Yeah, and it was, though. The character he chose in his stand-up to do a character.
Right.
And it's his personality, but it was... he was such a friend of mine, Yakov, before when he come to Russia, and, you know, no, Russia come to you.
Right.
And that whole reverse formula became his entire beat for what he does. I lived not far from here. I lived on Camino Palmero in Hollywood, and I had just... I needed help moving in there because I had lived in Palms. And my new neighbor was Vanna White. I just met her.
Get out.
And another friend of mine.
Do you like my new shrubbery? Would she kind of gesture to it?
Well, the joke was that we would hear her with her guy at night going, give me an O. Oh. That's not nice. And she's lovely. So
it's a funny joke, though.
It's not bad. You can't really do it anywhere because I don't do jokes that make fun of people too bad.
Sure.
Or if I do, I dive bomb as quickly out of them. But then Yakov was my moving guy. He helped me move.
No kidding.
I had a U-Haul truck I rented.
Oh, my God.
And he had a tank top. And he was just working for Mitzi as a janitor at the Comedy Store. He was cleaning and he was getting some spots. And he would work there really hard. He worked the door, but he was cleaning the place. He was from Russia, and you put me to work. I want work.
No kidding. That's
interesting.
You don't see guys showing up to the Comedy Store with that same type of vigor anymore.
Right.
Well, if a guy comes up and says, I want to clean your toilet, you kind of say, might as well go on stage.
Yeah.
You know?
While you're here.
Use your mouth, because you got a potty mouth.
Now, obviously you're doing the Nokia this Friday, and that's a huge show. How do you put together an act now that the second you go on stage, everyone knows
people
who you are?
Shit for you, yeah.
It's better than what I've been doing. You know, and in the last couple specials that I did, it kind of helped me. I don't know. In the past 8 years, I do more theaters than clubs. I'll do clubs in L.A., and I'll do clubs out on the road, because otherwise I can't work out anything new. Then it's the same, hey, here's the same story of my penis and balls. here's a variation on the penis and balls story.
But Part two.
I love being funny. And that's one thing that's what we all share is funny. When you had me on your podcast,
so
you obviously didn't just have me on because... You know,
well,
I met, you know, I've got a book to sell, you know, but it's.
Do you have a preference over theaters versus clubs, or is it like, I mean, because obviously
there's
the ripple laughter with theaters, the timing's a little different, right?
I find them no different, really.
Yeah.
But the difference for me is in a club, I can take my time a little more and I can explore more. I can go off for 7 minutes and then just go, because I'm doing a couple shows. If I was doing a couple shows, I mean, if I was selling tickets where I would, and I'm not selling that much, where I would do two shows in a theater, and there's guys that do that, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, Louis's out there, and he'll do four shows on a weekend, and he's just a monster at it, and he's coming up with new stuff the moment he starts talking to you.
Yeah, no
you
kidding.
Know, it's just unbelievable.
Do you feel that locked into your, I mean, you've been doing stand-up, what, 20?
37
years. 37
years.
So, I mean, you've got to be so locked into
I don't feel locked into anything.
But, I mean, like, your point of view so much that you can go off on a seven-minute tangent and be like, wow, I'm so sharp on what it is I want to say right now.
Well, I don't even think that. I just think I don't care. I think I'm funny, and if they don't at that moment, then they're probably right, because that's their response to it. So something happened where it's possible I'm off, but for the most part, you know, it's like your pilot. You know, people all say to all of us, you know, are you going to be funny tonight? They right. all say that.
Right.
And that's literally like asking your pilot, you know, are you going to get me home from Malaysia? You know,
you know, well, so, 99% of the time, that is correct.
That is just, that's you don't want to see that.
They can't find a plane. Like, well, that's the weirdest thing ever.
The sad part is there are people still at baggage claim looking for where and when it's coming in. It's been a week.
Walking from carousel 3 to 4.
Being back and forth. Yeah. They don't know where it is.
They don't have a cell phone. And, you know, they can't
I did watch on CNN last night that one of the people suggested to the moderator that I know we're not supposed to believe in aliens, but there is a chance, because it does appear that something from the heavens came and took this plane. So, but a guy said that, and right. the moderator, Blitzer? No.
If it was in the Situation Room, then it's fucking legit.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't in there. But it is funny. It is humorous to us mere mortals to think that some giant being
did. Yeah, it's like J.J. Abrams Lost is happening now for real.
Mars Attack.
Yeah, right?
Mars Attacks. Is it Attacks or Attack?
Attacks, I think.
Yeah,
it was Attack. That is such a good movie.
Great movie.
But imagine them taking all those people and trying to do little tricks with them. But I don't... What would you do?
What would be your defense if they did come down? Let's say next week. Let's say next Friday. They come down. You've had your show. Went great.
And but like, I can't do it Shabbat. You mean the aliens?
Yeah, if they strapped you down to this chair...
I won't even sit in that chair. I'd already take my own life. I'd cut myself on your unused wine holder. Look at it. It just sits there. It's a wine holder, right?
Sure.
It's bottles of wine.
Yeah.
It's right behind you.
Yeah.
And he's looking at it.
I know what it is.
Okay.
The best part is he has bottles of wine on the table, but they're not in the wine holder.
That's the kind of rack Barbara Walters has at home to hold all of her...
The dildos?
Wow, that's not nice.
You wanted to
say I like her so much.
So do I. She is
so
great.
Cool.
She's a icon is the right word.
Yeah. And she's also she's just a smart person who's been around a long time, no matter what people think. Most people love her. I mean, most people just love famous people anyway.
Also, to be that but still she's, yeah, but, with it, I think, you know, and to be able to sit on the couch and have conversations and still contribute,
yeah.
I mean, you know.
I was on the show and she said it was right around when The Aristocrats came out. So it was like 2007 or something.
What did she genuinely say to you about that?
She said on the air, I used to love that joke. My dad told me that joke.
On wow.
the air. And Whoopi went, what? And I said, I don't think we should be saying this, because they told, you know, you don't say stuff.
Right. You don't say.
And I said, well, that's not meant. She said, no, it's not meant for television, but it was a funny joke because it's all about the things you're not supposed to say.
Good
and
for
so,
her.
But
that's incredible.
I mean,
well,
she's the, you know.
She says it in the most analytical way possible.
She's Yoda.
By the way, if there was a little clip, if they cut back the joke that your joke in The Aristocrats, if there was a cut back between you and her delivering that joke, I mean, that might.
I don't
it might
think
be
she
one of the greatest clips of all time.
Break the internet.
Maybe she could have acted it out with me.
I mean, we're talking about Barbara Walters being an icon, but not to toot your horn, Bob Saget. But I mean, your career has spanned so many years, and to do things like the stuff that you did on America's Funniest Videos, Full House, The Clean Cut, and now be the Entourage guy, the dirty jokes, and the roast, and The Aristocrats.
Well, hopefully,
like,
be more than that in the years to come. I want to combine them all and then explode on the street.
It is amazing though, because, you know, obviously in this like business, how tough it is to stay relevant and to keep like and like what it's
and,
like.
And people want to brand you; they really do.
Yes, yeah,
that's what,
and they, lock you into something.
Yeah,
and you've not allowed yourself to.
Well, I don't know what I'm doing. I mean, there's a bunch of things coming my way right now, and I'm not sure what I'm doing. I know that I'm writing. I know I wrote this book. I know I'm promoting this book. And I know I'm going to Australia in May. I've never gone to Australia.
That's right.
I'm going to do stand-up in Australia.
Wow. They love American comedy.
Yeah. I love Australia.
You're going to fucking murder that place.
I don't want to do that. I just want to entertain the people. You want me to wear, like, fatigues and put on
Bob Saget coming out. Yeah.
Why is he wearing infrared gear? I'm doing... theaters there, or it's a Live Nation tour.
Will you
it's
come with
called the Dirty Daddy tour, because I think my book's going down there, because Harper Collins is sending me to English speaking people, which is a really good choice, because I barely am translatable in this language.
Will you come down with any sort of Australian
disease? I will.
I'm sure.
I'll have little.
How many koalas will you put fingers inside of?
I will not touch an animal. That's what I'm trying to teach people: is don't touch animals. And koalas have those long, sharp nails. They would rip that chair to shreds.
Do you remember that old Geraldo joke about the guy who the who said his? It was amazing. Where it was the kid. The woman was like, "I would let my son have sex with anything as long as he was happy, even a koala." And then one guy, he said that joke and spoke up and was like, "Yeah, but what about the fingernails?" And he's like, "Really? That's where you like
right.
The whole fucking the koala in itself wasn't enough for you to, you know?" And then you just think about,
damn it, I missed it. He's not alive.
He was
he was so funny.
The best. It's my favorite.
When I got roasted and I was so scared of him. That was the person I was so frightened of.
Well, because like he would put such passion. Like when when Geraldo did the Larry the Cable Guy roast and he yells in the microphone, "Why are you so successful?"
Yeah.
Like, and he does that with the way that that makes you go, "Oh shit, that's real."
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know that he's not going to take the jokes from the writers. He's going to do his own thing. And
he takes no prisoners.
Yeah. He's going to cut as hard as he can.
He told me I look like the Vlasic pickle stork. With that long, pointy nose and those granny glasses, you look like the Vlasic pickle store.
Oh,
and we
God.
Started to become friendly. I talked about this in the book, Dirty Dad.
Good.
There you go. All of this.
Comes out April 8th, by the way.
Okay.
Perfect. I know you.
We'll give extra plugs to it on the episodes to follow.
It's coming out in hardback, softback. You can rub the softback. It becomes a hardback. It's coming out in contact lenses. You can butterfly it, saute it. It's going to be on iBooks. They have. I did the audio recording of it.
Oh, no kidding.
And I had to change some things because somebody else died, so that I had to change something. So that's not. I won't say who because it'd be a surprise.
I'm glad you did that.
Stay tuned.
That's my favorite way to. I mean, I've never been a giant reader, but the audiobooks are so like Tina Fey's. Like people that actually have
great
people, but like you're in the same boat where you have great delivery and a great voice and great timing. It makes the whole experience. It's not even like a lazy way of doing it, but it's like, why wouldn't you want to hear it from
the
source
itself? I'm still excited. I'm in the same boat with Tina Fey. If I'm in the same boat with Tina Fey, she's going to have a baby.
Yeah.
And I know she's married and stuff, but whatever.
You guys have both.
But you're in the boat. You're if that's the case, you're far off.
How big a boat is it? It can't be too big. I'll still I'll find her.
I mean, it's got enough room for you, Fey, in that chair. That's all it's got.
It's so great. Boy, I need a lady really bad. Not bad. But something.
Are you looking?
I'm not looking. That's the thing. But I've just gone through a lot of human life stuff lately. So nothing.
What do you look for?
A vagina, and then
that's step one.
Two eyes above it.
All right.
You know when they
sorry to all the pirates listening to this.
Remember
one.
All the movies where you do that? You film your chin upside down. You put two holes.
The best.
On it?
Yeah,
that's all I want. That's all I want. That's all I need.
Two eyes, a chin, and a hole.
I've been a sock puppet. Is that? I don't need much. Actually, I'm actually very particular. That's the problem. I won't just take anybody home and then tell them how to get out.
Let's also be honest. Being who you are, it's not easy to.
You know what? I got kids and I love them,
and I
don't want them to be tweeted by somebody younger than them that I left my juicy pants in your dad's spa. You know, it just sounds terrible.
I mean, because how old are you kids?
They're 27, 24, and 21. They're women.
Did you say that I'd have to retweet it? Is that what you said?
Yeah, I have to retweet. That was about. Yeah, you're bringing back some, and I have to set up again, though.
No, that's fine.
Brad was stepping over
it. It was like 2 seconds ago. We know it.
I left their juicy pants in my spa, and then I have to retweet. Yeah, and I'll give them back after I bleach out the poo stains. Assuming that she. Oh, you just took an audio hit. Did you hear that? That was weird. That was something I was not supposed to say. Is it because you hit some button?
Oh, no, I clapped. Right? Was that it?
Fucked with your head.
There was an audio.
Yeah,
hit.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry about that. I was just entertained by the jokes so much.
Only three poops allowed on this.
These are jokes. That's what's fun about doing, to answer your question, is I'm doing some other theaters that I like. I'm only going places I want to go. Maybe it's because I'm older and I just don't want to waste any more time. And
well, you have the freedom to do that.
I want to be happy. I do have that bit of freedom. I'm a new freedom lady. I like a panty liner and I like a non-toxic string hanging out of my V. But when
Harlan tells me the same thing, though. Harlan, I used to open for him and he was like, dude, he's like, I'm not at a point where I have to. I only want to do the best places, and I don't want to go places that are close and where I want to go.
And it could be a club, because some clubs are places that you love. Like, some comics don't. You think you've gone and done a club, your life's over. But there's places like the Comedy Works in Denver, or there's Helium in Portland, and it's just
great
a place
clubs.
If you want to work on your stuff. I personally am not a guy that can go do it in front of a couple thousand people. I want that to be, they're paying more money. I want them to see a little more of a finished thing.
Right.
And I dress my package up even a little better.
Wow.
You're higher up on the stage.
A little for
you don't want your junk to be, well, it's not the smell. I just don't want it to be framed poorly.
Sure.
Because in a club, you're down low. You could have your sack hanging out of one of your side of your underwear.
Sure. And then just the first two rows would know. And after that, you're good.
You could have your pin sticking out of the open hole in the front of it. That's the only reason it exists, not to pee out of it. Because a lot of comics do that premise. Why is the hole there? Why don't you just pull it to the side?
Right.
The reason it's there is so you can keep your pin out all the time so it can always sense for danger. It's actually meant as a probe. And it's that much closer to the your outside of your pants. Or not outside, unless your zipper's down. Oh, I did a thing for somebody. I did a thing for somebody as a favor, and I walked.
You pulled their zipper down?
No, I walked out of the toilet. It was a film shoot, and I walked out, and everything was out. I didn't know it. I didn't pull my zipper up. My underwear were just boxers and my dinger, and it's not the most impressive thing in the world. Everything's out, just out. And like open and just look at, and she said, "You might want to close your zipper." And then my friend told me that she was going to think about that the rest of the night. She was like obsessed that she's not getting laid and all this stuff.
Well,
so that's what she's thinking about.
That was her Bob Saget moment.
It's like Groundhog Day for her. Saw its shadow and it was on the side of her beard. Poor thing.
What did anybody have? You know that trick people used to do where they used to put their finger through their zipper hole and act like it was a penis.
Oh, yes.
It
took me a minute because I got scared.
The finger dick trick.
I didn't know what you meant. I thought it sounded like you were putting your finger into someone's
urethra. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's what I do.
Shove a pointer finger inside.
Good trick,
if
people.
Your urethra, by the way, is bigger than, like, most guys, whatever regular normal size penis is,
sure,
if their urethra,
12 and a half inches,
guy, whatever it is, it can be real, it can be fake, but if the urethra is bigger.
Oh, God.
You know, like,
it's my worst nightmare, waking up with a bigger urethra.
It's like one of those little change purses. That's the hole?
Jesus. Oh, God.
All urethra. If that's all, you know how much, that's terrible. The only good thing about it is you could clean it with a pipe cleaner and stuff. In case it got, you know, you went out and went into places you shouldn't be going. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
No, why are you apologizing?
We're
laughing.
I wanted to say, I want to get back to the roasting thing, though. Like, because you said you were scared of Greg, but I know I've seen, you know, from the roast.
I'll answer that.
Yeah.
The stage manager I actually know of that roast, actually, then Joel Gallen's the producer and the director. Mm-hmm. So the stage manager comes over, we're with a headset, and he says, and in front of the whole audience, these are when things are under production.
Yeah,
and
sure.
Taped for live, so people spit out things they don't mean to spit out. And the stage manager comes over, first assistant director, and goes, "Joel says, try to look like you're not horrified." And the whole
audience, and everyone could hear it?
Everybody.
Oh,
and I was
God.
Like, I said, thank you. What? Just tell people in the stage next door.
Right.
And because, you know, Greg sat down, and then I sat back, and then I just started to laugh. But Greg was one of the only people, he and Brian Posehn on my particular Comedy Central roast, that I wasn't friendly with. And I didn't really know Cloris Leachman, but every other person that was on my roast was actually a friend of mine.
So does it make it easier to take?
That's why I did it.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was, I needed to have... And they just did that, I think, with the one that they just did for James Franco. It was a fun roast.
Yeah, there was,
because they were his
friends. I loved it. Yeah.
And that's a nice... It's a nice thing if you're going to make fun of people.
That you know the guy.
That you know people, because you're making fun of them, but... What's weird is Greg and I, then I started to want to be his friend. So we started talking, we exchanged numbers. I was like, you're so funny, man. And then I'm like, you know, boy crushing on him. And he's reciprocating. And we're like going to hang out. And then we talked on the phone. And I can't tell you what happened because it's in the book. So
Right.
But it's, you know, it's all these great things in the book, Dirty Daddy.
Yeah.
April 8th, HarperCollins by It Books, actually, which is a subsidiary of HarperCollins. Then I'm going to be doing talkbacks, one in L.A., one in New York, one in... Whatever they call them, talks, book talks. I don't know.
Oh, is that where you read the book to an audience? Or?
No, you're a moderator. I'm doing one at the 92nd Street Y in New York, and that's going to be cool. That's big venue.
Do you talk about directing Dirty Work in the book?
I do.
Because I can tell you, no joke, one of my favorite movies of all time.
That's so sweet.
I'm not even joking.
Yeah, well, you were the audience for it because it was made for 15-year-old boys.
Yes.
That was us.
That's
fucking amazing.
And
movie.
That's three guys that wrote that. That's, of course, Norm MacDonald, and it was Fred Wolf, and Frank Sebastiano wrote the original script and then worked on it. And They went to the bullpen to really
quoted it.
Kick the
4 years after this.
Yeah. Four minutes missing from it. It was an R-rated movie, and I had to cut 4 minutes out of it. And I'm not happy about it, but I'm not going back in time.
How was that whole
experience?
Except
on this interview.
but directing Farley?
It was a pretty wonderful experience, and it was also terrible sometimes. It's very hard, and you want to make everybody happy, and I fucked up sometimes because it's. You get 4 hours sleep, and everybody right. wants to be the director, and everybody has their vision. And,
well, then I'm sure.
And a comedy movie is a bloodbath, quite frankly. Yeah. It doesn't have to be, but I'm not a guy that just bends over and takes it unless the money is really good. I'll take it if a truck is backing up money.
Unless there's an old Jewish man jizz tear that's coming in for free.
There you go.
Jizz tear?
Jizz chair, yeah.
Oh, I thought you said jizz tear, which I was thinking is the greaser got snagged on a coat hanger and then the jizz is infected. By the way, I want to repeat again from something that was said at the beginning of this podcast. If spinach and dip of a yellow substance is coming out in your urine, you could possibly be dying, and you need to go to
it's
a
very
doctor.
Important information.
If spinach and dip is coming out,
I think yeah.
You know the first thing they do when you go to the doctor, and you go, and the doctor says, "What's wrong with you?" And you go, "I've got spinach dip coming out of my urine." He goes, "Hold on a second." He comes back with a bowl of chips. That's an emergency.
Well, he's got to try for sure.
He's got to taste it and see if it's. Turned. Maybe it hasn't turned yet. Because once the dip is turned, then there's no hope for you. Have you ever tried those diarrhea fajitas?
Pretty sure diarrhea fajita is playing at the Troubadour next weekend.
That's where diarrhea fajita started was the Belly Room, and then
over the Comedy Store.
I started in there. That was my first set in L.A.
No shit.
Yeah.
Did you still have the same feelings about it now?
It was haunted, and I believe it's haunted. And I spent a lot of time. I hosted the Comedy Store for 7 years. I hosted. I just lived there.
Is that your favorite club in L.A.?
No, my favorite club in L.A. is. I don't know. I feel comfortable going to the Laugh Factory and walking in there, and I don't tell anybody when I'm coming because I'm not that kind of guy anymore. I don't know why. There's things I've always have romance about growing up in the Comedy Store and the Improv, and I have love and not love of both of them from past history, just like Pavlovian shit. I love the Comedy and Magic Club. I'll go down there and I'll do a gig there.
There you go.
Who were you like performing with at the Comedy Store when you were going up there? I mean, obviously, was it
when I did?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, when I
who
was.
Who were you getting to see on a night?
It's all in the book, you know, Dirty Daddy, HarperCollins, great. April 8th. But it's. And if you Google, it's like fucking sold everywhere. I mean, I can't believe how many places it's sold. It's actually getting sold out of. You can get the rectal implant of the book.
Wow. As you're shitting, you get the book through osmosis.
Half the book is shit anyway.
So. Oh, okay. There you go.
So all you have to do is it's like reading tea leaves. You can eat my book. Oh, it's the clapping that turns off the thing.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry I'm clapping, but I'm happy.
I'm happy that you're clapping. I didn't even know that. You know, your sound system here is so good, it's like the clapper. You clap and the sound shuts off.
Damn right. That's what I do. The jokes are just, oh, my God.
Oh, the Comedy Store.
Yeah.
I was the first people I met there, Letterman was still doing a little bit of hosting work sometimes, but mostly just being amazing. And then he was about to get his morning show on NBC.
Nice.
Leno I'd watch all the time. It was amazing to watch. And Billy Crystal was on.
Holy shit.
Billy was really nice and said, "You're funny." You know, and I was like 22. Yeah. So I was sitting in the back and you couldn't get into the original. You couldn't get into the Belly Room and you couldn't get into the main room. You couldn't get into any 7 nights a week. You couldn't get into the building. It was that mobbed. And I mean,
Look at the names going up.
Pryor was going on.
What was it like watching him live? I mean,
it was a gift. I mean, he was. It makes me feel bad about everything I do because also sometimes I go, wow. So that's what it's like to channel just talking to people,
right?
And there was, it was the king for a reason. You know, he was. They would give him the. Robin would put the cape on him, and he would. They'd put a crown on him in the main room one night. Robin before he got Bork and Mindy. Robin was getting a show called. Oh, it was George Schlatter was doing Laughing 2, the sequel to Laughing, and Robin got that, and that was like people were booking things, and Jeff Altman was like the guy to watch. And I was just this kid, and it was it was everybody. Carson would go in a couple times.
Oh,
Red Fox would go up. Not a lot. Those guys didn't go up a lot, but they came in.
I mean, as a young comic, 22, are you aware of the moment that you're in? That
well, I got no pay at the time. We got none. And I didn't. And I'd made a decision, and Mitzi was really nice to me. She said, you should not go to film school. I came out here to go to I got into USC grad school. I'd won the
That's where we both went.
Yeah. And look at us.
Well, Trojans, yeah. Now we're all sitting together and doing a podcast.
With candles and a schmegma chair. But what time is it, by the way? How long do your podcast?
We got about 5 more minutes.
That's all?
Yeah. Do you want to do more?
No, we can go for 15 more.
Perfect. Let's do it.
If you're allowed.
Yes, absolutely. We are. Yeah, we don't want to stop it.
You run out of hard drive?
No, I got plenty, baby.
Things are going good.
Yeah.
Sold the matching chair that used to sit there.
Hard drive for days, Bob
Saget. Got the typewriter from Barton Fink over here. But it was... I don't know. I'm very appreciative that I went through the change I went through. I went the 3 days at USC. You guys graduated USC?
Yeah, he graduated.
I graduated from the acting school and still paying him back.
That's understandable.
But it was great training. I came from musical theater, so it had to strip all my bad habits away of being really big.
That bad habit I had
straight.
Being straight.
I was one of two straight
guys that turned. There's nothing wrong with that.
Absolutely.
I quit football to play Danny Zuko in Greece in high school.
You did?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had gay panic when I came into this apartment. But I...
You see him and me, you're like, okay, I don't know what kind of thing I'm walking into.
Well,
right now.
I walk in and I'm just thinking apple boxes. That's what I'm thinking. There's no other way this is going to get going. Actually,
it's not going to be a London Bridge thing, more like a Leaning Tower of Pisa, but whatever.
Well, you could run through him a few times.
Sure, absolutely.
But, you know, you're such a funny comedian. I didn't even get to that. All we're talking about is me, and I'm just riffing about it, and you're off praising me, and I'm taking it like a guy, well, that's all it.
Well, but
I'm
you've earned it, though.
No, but Bob, but you're very, very, very funny. When I met you at that... K-Rock thing, which is really nice. They give the money to babies with AIDS and
they do.
Wounded warriors.
Yeah.
So, that's
not even exaggeration.
That's not an exaggeration. So if you give it to those people and then put the likes of you and me up there to entertain the folks, that's there's something wrong with the world. you're really, really funny.
Yeah, Brad's the best.
Thank you, sir.
And you killed that night, too.
That was the night Jay Moore went on after and said, let's face it, after Brad Williams, we're all playing for second place. And that's one of the greatest moments of my career.
It's interesting because I'd gone on before that, so I'd already thought that nothing was to follow me anyway.
because you had Stamos come out during your set.
Whatever, you know.
And then
he does hold me up. He comes out during my set, and it's like they forget I even have cell memory. People forget I'm even a person.
Who is that thing holding the guitar next to John Stamos?
People go apeshit. Mike Young told us the first time he met Stamos, it was a great story, because to sit down for My Man as a Loser, and we were like, dude, I just envisioned Stamos taking one last bite of yogurt, throwing it to the side. There's no garbage can nearby, and a garbage can shows up and just catches his yogurt. He has that type of... charisma.
Yeah. You could hit him in the mouth and all that white stuff just comes out of his mouth and a girl comes over with a bucket to catch it. So he does yogurt to mouth film.
So things aren't going that well for him now?
No, he's actually doing great. I have lunch with him tomorrow. That's my name dropping for the day.
Woo!
It's a big name drop.
He's a great guy. And he's like a brother. We're brothers. I mean, you know.
You guys both shared an experience because... I mean, you were obviously working beforehand through the stand-up and the shows.
He was working before me with television and acting. I mean, he was 16 when he started on General Hospital.
No kid.
So I don't know what I was. I was a comic out in the clubs and got married, and he was – he's 10 years younger than me, something like that? No, he's he's only like 7 years younger than me.
Okay.
Oh, this is awesome. I'm having a good day.
And I always see him at the Comedy Store with you and Jeff Ross. And then on your roast, he was great on your roast. I mean, it's so awesome.
He goes
to see.
The Laugh Factory a lot, too. He'll go anywhere we tell him to go.
Does he ever want to get up?
He's gotten up, but he gets up. You know, he's on stage so much with all the Beach Boys stuff that he goes up in front of 100,000 people. So he'll play 4-hour sets. Wow. So he speaks some, and I saw him at the Beacon Theater for the 50th anniversary of the Beach Boys. I took my daughter to it, and he got up and spoke for a while. He introduced them, and he hosts things, and he hosts a lot of things for a lot of things he cares about.
Yeah, sure, he's charismatic.
He's a very incredible guy, very, very unusually great guy, and so is Dave. Dave can do things with his balls and his penis. Dave, I'm not kidding. Dave is a grown man. who wants to be the clean guy, and
right.
he'll take out his wiener out of a onesie. We did a Super Bowl commercial together.
They
gave him a red
for yogurt, amazing,
right? Or you gave him a red onesie. They gave him one.
Yeah,
he took it home, and John and I were having dinner right after we shot the yogurt commercial, so it hadn't aired yet. And so then Dave calls up and says, "Look, can you come over? We were all going through some personal family sicknesses at the time." Mm-hmm. And John and I left where we were at 7 o'clock. We'd already eaten dinner because we're basically the Golden Girls.
There you go.
Got to eat it.
That's not a bad thing.
See, you want Blanche? You don't want to eat. I like Blanche.
She was the best.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we went to Dave's house. And Dave was sitting by the fire in a red onesie and took out his wiener out of the only hole in the onesie. It was buttoned up. The only hole, and was just playing with it. Now, not it was soft. I mean, he wasn't a gay act.
Did anybody say cut it out or no?
No, I had many times. Yeah. But we're so past that. It's not even. And he just kept doing it, and he kept going like, and he was making it like a puppet. And I said, stop it. And the more mad I got, the more he did it. So it's basically like an older brother who gets angry. So it's not. I'm like the opposite of what the stage persona I project is,
yeah.
And Dave is the opposite of his. Because Dave would just run around. I had a birthday party when I was 50 in Vegas, and Dave just ran around naked with five guys at the Palms in the bowling suite and smashed his balls up against the window, screaming at Las Vegas and farting as loud as he can. There's no booze in these people. This was what? Just, yeah, he just like
just
to
pure
fuck
adrenaline.
It's a frat kid. It's like Bluto. Or,
yeah.
You know, wow. He's just a fucking nut. He's just funny.
Is he carrying the puppet with him or no?
He doesn't have woodchucks. We did that Fallon thing
yeah.
before Jimmy left
that
the
That was
air.
Amazing. Yeah.
That was their idea. They wrote it, and they were very, very brilliant at what they wrote. This one guy, I forgot his name, he wrote the whole sketch. But they gave Dave the woodchuck, Mr. Woodchuck, which was this thing on Full House.
Oh, yeah.
And Dave had the old Mr. Woodchuck, but the face got eaten off by a dog. And so he had it at home, and it just looked like something that had been through the war.
Yeah, that's depressing.
So depressing. So they gave him a new one. You would have thought that someone gave him like the most beautiful girl in school to live with.
I have a brand new Mr. Woodchuck.
I think he took it to his room and fucked it. That's what I think. But then his
it's in the book.
Fiance Mel came in, so I don't think maybe they had a three way.
Hey, why not?
Her and a woodchuck.
I mean, that's got to be a bucket list for somebody.
Well, you know what's bad is the thing eats wood. It just says it right there. It's just right on.
So Dave's not safe.
No. Not if that thing. What if that thing comes to life like the movie Magic or Chucky, that kind of thing?
Oh, God. Shit.
You do Chucky jokes in your act?
I don't.
Did you ever do that kind of thing?
I played Chucky one time on Jimmy Kimmel Live. They had me.
What a world.
Yeah, right? I sat on the front lawn.
Tell Bob the commercials you get.
Yeah, yeah. I sat on the front lawn of Cousin Sal's house, and as trick-or-treaters came up, I was absolutely still. And then when they walked past me, then I would come to life and then run after these kids.
That's funny.
Give them nightmares for life, but it made for hilarious late-night television. And Terry Hatcher got pissed at me because I scared her kid.
Holy crap.
Yeah, because they were walking through the area and Terry Hatcher's kid.
Oh, so you did this in a real neighborhood.
Yeah, like they didn't stage this. This is a real neighborhood.
Oh, my God. Is it Googleable? Can I find it?
I hope so.
Yeah, we'll find the link.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you a fan of pranks like that?
No. I don't like pranks at all. I hate them. Mm-hmm. I hate them. You'd think I'd like them. People are like, so, or people also want to show me pictures of their poo, and they'll like have it as their. They do.
Who does that?
Because I'll talk about something, or I'll talk about diarrhea for 5 minutes,
sure.
Just because it's a funny word.
Yes. Yeah.
Ask Carlin Williams. He goes diarrhea, but some people don't
diarrhea,
like it.
Buddy.
And then the Wookiee sound of diarrhea
sir,
being made.
Sir, over here, can you have doing a show?
He's so funny.
He's the best. He's one of the few guys I can watch do the whole headline set every like if I
it changes
did a weekend
so
with
much.
Him, yes, and right. And even the bits that are staples are still like he'll add in a look of like there might be a, like that sir doing a show over here and then like sir have you ever done he'll throw in the like have
and
you he, ever
and he's doing it for himself why I love stand up that's why like I sometimes I need a break like I'm gonna take a break like I'm taking a break I go to Australia and then I'm booked in a couple theaters, but I don't really want to do it for a while. I want to do it like this Friday. I'm real stoked for it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
At the where am I?
Nokia
Club Nokia. That stage is as big as the house. It's such a beautiful place. Holy crap!
Have you ever been? You've been in there? Obviously.
I did a benefit there once for something nice. Something that helped kids. I can't remember what, but I know it was nice and I know it was fun.
So do you go? So you'll feel comfortable. You're not gonna. Are you gonna go early?
I feel comfortable anywhere.
Yeah.
Well, I do a sound check because I play music. Half my act is comedy music. If I learned how to play guitar, I'd be really a threat. Well, I was nominated for a Grammy this year.
I was just going to say that. That's incredible.
But Kathy Griffin won, and the key was she's better.
at least you're not bitter.
No, I wasn't being bitter. Mm-hmm. I said she's better.
Yeah.
Did you think I said bitter?
No, because you said she's better.
At least you're not.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Well, she's so. I don't do that amount of. My God, she puts out. She outputs. She doesn't. She put did. Out, but she outputs. She outputs so much comedy.
She did two specials last year, I think.
And this one was just audio. I mean, she really.
What do you attribute that to? The amount she talks, plus the amount she thinks, plus the amount
all
of
she
celebrity.
Does. I think she does it so much, and the celebrity part of it. I mean, I've got, you know, there's elements. I'm a bit of a personality comedian.
Yeah,
and I like to talk to the people, and I do think of it as a relationship.
Yep.
And I think that we're friends, and there's no nervousness. There's excitement when I go do a show.
Yep.
And she loves it. I know she loves it. And she's just in a good place. So whether people like her or don't like her, she's a force to be reckoned with. I mean, I respect her a lot.
Well, having a following too, like it's. I mean, I feel like, and you're obviously developed the same relationship with your
people
fans.
With torches waiting for me after the show. Pitchforks and torches.
Is there a standard Saget fan though that you like? If you could create an action figure?
Yeah. Well, no. But there's people when I do my shows now. They yell out five things that they've seen from my life, whether it be like the Tourette's guy or mm-hmm. they'll yell out horrible.
Oh, the Tourette's guy.
Half baked line. Probably. Half baked line gets yelled at, and they do it like audio samplers. The last special I did, they just do it, and there's nothing I can do but own it and
mention,
and then try to tell them to. Straighten their life out
because
the person that's yelling out "you suck dick for coke," there's something wrong with a person that yells that out. They're not usually on a date.
Yeah,
they're not usually.
Obviously, that's not usually a line that translates into getting laid that night.
It's weird. I get stoners, but nice people. It's mm-hmm. like I really like my audiences a lot. Sometimes they get really drunk, which I get concerned about because years ago I would get really drunk, and I just know that it can be bad because you can hurt somebody,
right?
And shit your pants.
Whereas David Tell says karaoke. That's one of the side effects.
Bad things happen when you drink. Anal sex, karaoke.
Does that die down? Because I know Chappelle has gone off on rants when people like won't stop just saying lines from his shows and
I'm
stuff.
Lucky I don't have that because I talk so fast mm-hmm. that I don't like to have a quiet moment. And I take them, but when I have something thoughtful to say, which is new stuff I'm trying to work toward, which would be more mature type mm-hmm. of speak. But I talk at this level when I'm doing stand-up. Yeah. I don't spew it out nervously like I used to, because when you're beginning a lot,
you do your
own rim shots before anybody has time. You know.
Right.
So anyway, what I was saying was, and you're not even...
You're not comfortable with silence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what most comedians' flaw is. And that's where someone comes up that you go, my God, they're good. That's because, Nick Kroll or somebody will talk and it'll be laid out mm-hmm. and you'll go, wow, that was, I got it. And it was written or it was quick and it was done in the moment, mm-hmm. which is the key to everything.
Absolutely.
Fucking pulled this to a standstill. My God, I pinched it out and then I dry queefed.
We should have got should have gone out of the Coulier dick ball.
Pulling his dick around. That's a
there you go.
That is the that's a good idea.
I realize I have to go now.
Yeah, we are going to wrap it up.
That's really happened.
Okay, great.
Let's wrap it up.
Can't thank you enough for doing this.
It's a pleasure.
You're like,
you guys. Well, we have a thing now. Now we have we have each other.
Like the
we
way do. You described coming into the comedy store and seeing those greats like that. Like it's. I mean, Brad and I both attest. Like been fans of you on many levels for a long time, and so see you around in any regard, and let alone in this apartment in the company of this chair is a really big deal and a huge honor.
I'll never forget that I've been here. I'll never come back to it.
I mean,
it is not far from somewhere that I have frequented. I won't say where because I don't want people to find you. But it's very cool and in its own way.
Well,
congrats on the trophy.
There you go.
That's really what I brought
you. Congrats on the trophy, Bob. Can't thank you enough. Go get the book. It's out April 6th.
April 8th.
April 8th. It's called Dirty Daddy, The Chronicles of a Family Man Turn Filthy Comedian. And if you're in the LA area, obviously go see Bob this Friday night at Club Nokia right there downtown Los Angeles.
9 p.m.
And
get his late
March 21st.
That ain't right. Your HBO special.
That was a funny thing that some people hated.
I loved it. It's a great special.
Thank you. I'm proud of it.
You should be.
And then I did That's What I'm Talking About.
Yep.
I don't know what the next one will be called, but I have a feeling it's going to have a hyphenation in it.
I'm pretty sure that's what this is.
It's
going to
be an apostrophe. Right.
Saying. Probably that chair will be involved in
some. Call it Schmegma chair.
Yeah, Schmegma chair. Bob Saget, Schmegma chair.
That's my German, that's when I perform in Berlin. I was, Don Rickles had one thing to say about that, ain't right. He said, I saw your HBO special last night. It was very good. And then he slapped me in the face and he said, you left out two fucks. Because there were a lot. I said, fuck a lot. Yeah. That was a nervous fuck habit because there was a lot of 21-year-olds from NYU. And that's how I thought I had to speak to them.
But, I mean, and one thing that all the comedians respect about you is that you don't stop. You keep going. You're never satisfied. You're always working.
Well, I don't even feel like I've begun yet. I mean, that's how I feel. I feel like I haven't done anything because people go, whoa, and Full House and the video. And it's like, none of that was, it's all a beautiful thing. It's a gift when you get jobs in this business. And if they go global, it's even more amazing. But I just want to do stuff that, I always feel like I'm 15 years behind in what I'm doing because
that's what helps drive you, right?
That's the age of the woman I date.
I think that's a perfect way to go out on.
All right. Thanks, I miss you more.